All right, welcome to Indie Media On Air. I'm Chris Burnett, and tonight we have a very special guest in studio, Mary Liz Thompson, who is the director of a new documentary film that is to be released soon. It was screened here in Los Angeles last week in Santa Monica, and it is called Who Bombed Judy Berry? And I must say, I was really blown away by the film, and I urge everybody to see it, to check it out when it comes out. And if you want to go to the website while we're in this discussion, go to whobombedjudyberry.com. My guest, Mary Liz Thompson, has a long history of involvement in politics and the film industry. In 1990, she co-produced and directed Redwood Summer, Where the 90s Begin, which aired on PBS. She documented the war zones in Central America, directed music videos with Island Records, worked for 60 Minutes, shot footage for the Academy Award-winning documentary Panama Deception, and directed a documentary, Flashpoint, about the alternative music scene in San Francisco, winning a New American Makers Best of the Year Award and a Local Hero Artist Award. Mary, welcome to Indie Media On Air.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I just want to say in person that the film was amazing. Thanks for all the hard work on doing that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Who Bombed Judy Berry? Where did this start?
Well, it started in earnest in 2009 in October. Daryl Cherney, the producer and also one of the subjects of the film, and I started editing with the deposition that Judy gave for the trial that she knew would happen before she was dying of cancer, and she was not going to be around for that. And for people who don't know the story, maybe I'll give a little background first, because I did start out, I was around for it when the bombing actually happened. Daryl Cherney and Judy Berry were two Redwood activists, Earth First activists, who were using nonviolent direct action to try and stop the destruction of the Redwoods, and they were on a musical tour for Redwood Summer. A bomb blew up in their car in Oakland, California. They were blamed by the Oakland police and the FBI of bombing themselves, of basically being eco-terrorists and carrying a bomb around in their car. Incidentally, a bomb that went off from a motion device. So what idiot would carry, be right, driving around with a live armed bomb?
Right.
So that was the case. They eventually sued and won a landmark lawsuit in 2002 and were able to show that the FBI and Oakland police did falsify evidence and violated their civil rights and attempted to frame them.
And that was in 2003?
2002.
Oh, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the political context of the Redwood Summer in 1990 was a very heated environment. A lot of activists were doing direct action. They were stopping logging trucks. They were bringing attention. And Judy and Daryl, one of the unique things about them and Earth First up in that area was that she was a union organizer, right? So she had relationships with the workers, which in this particular case was unprecedented.
It was pretty unprecedented. It really was, because there was so much tension between the loggers and the environmentalists, and it was whipped up by the corporate owners and the managers and that kind of thing as well. So for her to sort of break through the tension and the logic that people were using and be able to point out, and a lot of loggers knew this, that they couldn't keep cutting down their own jobs. It wasn't going to last. It wasn't sustainable. They knew it, too. Some of them knew it outright, and some of them just knew it deep inside. But
right, and so you have this corporation, Maxim, right? Is that they were around at that time.
Charles Hurwitz's corporation called Maxim bought out Pacific Lumber, which was run by a family company in a more sustainable fashion. They basically thought it was unthinkable to cut the old-growth redwoods. They just weren't going to do it. It wasn't in their plan. And when Charles Hurwitz bought it on junk bonds, which was kind of the beginning of the economy that we have now, where the corporate raiders buy things on with heavily leveraged debt, and then they just see things as standing cash. You can raid the pension fund. They raided the pension fund of the workers. They did all of that and started accelerating the cutting of redwoods at a pace no one had ever seen before.
Right, and the idea was that they were paying off their own debts, right? And it was directly related to Wall Street investments.
That's right.
And so there was this push just to cut everything down and turn it into cash.
And it was also a hostile takeover arranged by Michael Milken and the Junk Bond King and Ivan Besky, who were later charged with insider trading. And those people who made $500 million a year at that time were the ones who were leveraging these kind of deals. And it was what took the interest away from the workers and the community to the shareholders. It was that era, when that era started.
Right. And so here you have these radical and, you know, activists who were deeply connected to the land and concerned about workers' rights. It was Wobblies. I believe they were doing IWW-type organizing.
Yes.
And so the tension was heating up. And this was the beginning of the organizing of the first Redwood Summer, so trying to bring people up north. And she and Daryl were in the context of massive amounts of death threats and violent, trucks running into their cars. I mean, it was a pretty intense moment.
That's what made the whole, even, you know, the response of the FBI and Oakland Police so egregious, on top of everything that, you know, the ridiculousness of it. They had been receiving death threats. It wasn't like there wasn't any, we have no idea who might have wanted to do this. I mean, they had been receiving death threats for months, and these were things that were mailed. There were fingerprints. There were things on them. I mean, there was just nothing. They acted as, none of this is relevant at all.
Right. And so then about 6 weeks before Redwood Summer is about to begin, something in that neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
they are on a musical tour to raise, you know, funds, I'm not sure, or to bring attention to
bring Redwood attention, Redwood exactly, Summer. And start the organizing. They were playing in the Bay Area, and they were about to head to Santa Cruz.
Right. And so in Oakland, as they were driving, a bomb goes off. And the story is a little complicated, so I want to go through it. But basically, the first people on the scene are some FBI agents and Oakland PD. And it just so happens that one of the FBI agents who's on the scene is an expert in bomb making for the FBI, who gave a class a month before this bombing on basically how to blow cars up.
That was some information that came out in discovery, and it is pretty chilling, as there's a lot of key things about the way the on-site incident was handled. The one of the main persons from the FBI's own bomb squad, his name was Frank Doyle. He was also a teacher at a bomb school that was held on Louisiana Pacific Timberland. And it's known that the head of security for Louisiana Pacific was friends with Frank Doyle as well. So here they are, you know, working together and planning and blowing up cars with pipe bombs.
Right.
A month before.
That's not a coincidence.
And we have on tape of him at the crime scene saying, here you are. Here's the final exam.
Right. Now, people might be familiar with the name Frank Doyle. This character often shows up on the Discovery Channel show called Mythbusters as a guest retired FBI agent bomb expert. And for anybody who's ever seen the Mythbusters, you'll probably remember this guy, this Frank Doyle character. And so he's on the scene at that moment. And what happens is that he, being sort of the authoritative figure, you know, being a bomb FBI bomb expert, says, the bomb was in the back seat of the car, right, and not under the seat of the car. And why this is relevant is because you can then argue that they were carrying their own bomb and they're a victim of their own, bombing
campaign.
That's
right. They should have seen it. It was out in the open in the back seat. They knew it was there. It's what they were trying to allude to. Although you could take one look at the car and you can see where the damage was, and the back seat is completely intact. And Herb's driver's seat is completely blown up, and all of that came out as evidence over time. And what they had to prove in court was, not only did the agents lie, but they knew they were lying. And this is where it kind of came down to, they knew they were falsely saying they were carrying it because it was out in the open in the back seat. That was a false statement, and they knew it at the time they did it.
Were there other false statements?
Yeah, there was a false statement to get evidence about there being nails that matched in her car to the nails in the bomb. They were not. She was a carpenter, and she had nails in her car, but they were nowhere near anything in similarity to the nails that were in the bomb.
Right. And so this was all proven they won the court case in
2002.
Based
on, they were able to prove this. That's correct.
And they were in a civil suit, so they held the FBI and Frank Doyle and other...
And Oakland police officers.
So I think there were three OPD and three FBI agents who were found accountable for lying.
That's correct.
And trying to frame Judy Berry and Daryl Chaney.
Daryl Chaney.
And
it was considered a First Amendment civil rights lawsuit because it was search and seizure issues and freedom of speech.
Yeah. And so where does the case stand today? What's happening?
So what's exciting is today they had an ongoing issue which has to do with the evidence from the case. There was another unexploded bomb that went off about a month before the bomb went off in their car at a mill. And it looked like it was intended to look like it was from Earth First. It had something about how, you know, we don't like loggers or some sign, but it didn't explode at all. And it had a little paper sign next to it, which if you're planning on starting a fire, most likely your paper sign would burn. But so this evidence is some kind of plant that someone did to try and make the environmentalists seem like they were capable of bombing. That's what I think. That's what most people think. The evidence of that bomb has never been investigated. And there's duct tape and there's fingerprints and it didn't explode. So there's a lot of it left. The FBI, when Daryl Cherney and his legal team and Judy Berry's legal team won their jury award, part of the agreement was that the FBI would make the Oakland police would make May 24th Judy Berry Day in Oakland, which they did. And that if the evidence was ever going to be destroyed or thrown out, that they would notify his legal team and it'd be given to them. And the FBI agreed at the time of the trial when they resolved all this.
So literally 10 years ago, they agreed, this part of the settlement is that if you're ever going to destroy the evidence, you have to notify Daryl's lawyers.
That's right.
And so in 2010, they notified them.
And they said they're running out of space or whatever it was, they were going to get rid of this evidence. And so they said, no, you can't just throw it away. If you're going to get rid of it, we want it. We'll test it. And so the first judge said that, okay, you know, you can do that. And the FBI has been appealing ever since. And it came to another point where Judge Claudia Wilkin, who was their U.S. District Court judge in the original trial, ruled today that once again, no, the FBI should give the evidence over to an independent testing lab of Daryl Cherney's legal team's choice.
Right. So, and that happened today.
That happened today, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's really great. We don't have the results of it yet. I mean, it hasn't been. They have 2 weeks to either challenge this or turn it over. So in the next 2 weeks, the evidence will either be at a new forensic testing lab, or there'll be some other new legal challenge that I doubt they're going to get very far with, because the judge is telling them, look, you agreed to this in the past.
Right.
And so very soon we may get some actual independent testing going, which has been one of the biggest hurdles in this case, was the unwillingness and the inability of the FBI to actually follow any leads, to look at where evidence actually directs and follow up and find the bomber.
Right. And so, and just to clarify this point, this other piece of evidence is actually a bomb that was found in another mill that never properly exploded. Right.
That's right. And the other point is they know, because of the way it was made and the components in it, that it was made by the same person who the same bomb made the one that was in Judy's car.
Right.
So they do know that already. So if they can get evidence on this bomb, then they'll have DNA evidence of the one who bombed them as well.
Right. Okay, so that's the key point, is that there's this unexploded bomb out there that has never been looked at.
Right.
And it has all this character signatures of the one that actually blew up underneath Judy Berry's seat.
Yep.
And another thing I think that people should appreciate is the fact that there was this motion sensor. And there was actually a pretty complex bomb that was actually explained in the film, that there's multiple safeties, right? There's like three safety features.
There's a timer on it, so it had to go off within a certain amount of time. And there was the motion, which a ball bearing has to roll and connect in a certain way. And that can only happen with a moving car with motion.
Right. And so the idea to, you know, immediately blame, you know,
the victims who are in what the first agents described on the scene as a booby trap.
Right. And to be clear, because this is a bit of a complex story, the FBI and the Oakland Police Department immediately arrested Daryl and Judy, and she's in the hospital, you know, saving on from her life.
Incredibly injured, had, you know, her coccybone broken, just her whole pelvis shattered, everything. She didn't know she'd walk. She's in traction. And then they have the police at her door telling her she's arrested. And here she is. She doesn't know who did this to her. You know, you're horrified, and she lived in fear and in incredible pain. And Daryl as well. He's got a patch on his eye, and, You know, they're telling them, all right, we can tell you guys did this. Why don't you just admit it, you know? And just unbelievable.
You know, one of the most moving aspects of the film is watching the testimony by Judy, I think a month before she passed away from breast cancer. You know, and the way I heard Daryl describe it, you know, she was in enormous pain for 7 years, where, you know, had a very hard time sleeping at night. And, you know, and she continued her activism and her fight, you know, to find out who was responsible. But not only that, to help organize the 1996 Headwaters actions.
That's right.
It's an incredibly moving moment of this testimony that you can see her, you know, hardly being able to move, going through the details, and it's incredibly moving.
She was working on the details of the trial right up to her death, you know, right up to the last minute, including her own deposition, summarizing other people's depositions, getting all the information. And one of the things I think that made the movies easier to explain and deal with is that she is able to make her case and explain this really complex evidence in a way that makes sense. And it is a challenging story to tell in a movie where there's so much information, but there were also so much archival footage that we were able to use that really brings you there. So I don't want people to have a sense that it's just all talking. We use Judy's deposition, but then we go to the actions. We show you what blockades were like. You're actually there, and it's not interview talking. And we don't have any current talking heads of people thinking about the past. It's all taken from archival footage of the time, and I think that's what makes it more of a dramatic and emotional movie as well.
Yeah, it's very moving. And I want to let everybody know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to Mary Liz Thompson, who is the director-editor of Who Bombed Judy Berry. The film, it had a screening last week in Santa Monica, but there are more screenings,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I want to mention there's a screening May 5th at the Landmark Regent on Pico at the Awareness Festival. And that'll be Saturday, May 5th, Saturday at 7:30. Will be the next LA showing. We're doing kind of a festival and scattered theater tour circuit right now. We're looking for larger distribution and investment in the, you know, larger distribution of our movie. But we've so far been having an amazing run. We're getting packed or near sold out theater houses and everywhere we go. And people seem to be really excited to hear the real story behind this, that people are amazed that they didn't know more about. I keep getting that reaction, like, wow. And there is something about our redwoods of our country, and there's something mythic about it, and I think it hits people hard, and it's a deep story.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I remember it all pretty well, and I was fortunate enough to meet Judy when I was doing a benefit at the Long Haul in Berkeley, and she walked in 96, and like, oh. It's Judy Berry, you know, and it was, she, you know, she's had her spirit. She gave a talk. She was walking, you know, and
she defied expectations with that. She was able to walk, but she was in constant pain.
Yeah, yeah. The website is whobombedjudyberry.com.
We also have a Facebook page, which is really great to go in if you do see the movie or know about it or have comments. Please let us know. We love that.
How has the you said the film's been received very well. Where have you shown it, and what have the conversations been like?
We've shown it in San Francisco. We showed it at the Washington, D.C., and which was also really interesting. We had more of a review there that was kind of placed it in this as a compelling American story and putting it in American history context, which was interesting. I think that people there especially knew even less than on the West Coast about it. And people were really amazed. I think that Judy and the whole movement, their creativity, the music, the way they use humor, you get, we get people laughing, crying, and angry, and then inspired all in one movie.
And there's quite a number of testimonials for this film, which is really nice to read on your website. Bonnie Raitt, Tom Hayden, Peter Coyote, Ed Asner, John Densmore, Mike Rozelle. How hard was it to actually get this film made?
Well, Once we decided to do it, it wasn't that hard to, we didn't get a lot of other institutional support. It was a challenge. It's a challenge to describe and present this movie of what we wanted to do, to the usual grants and foundation kind of world. So we were able to do it ourselves and raise a lot of grassroots money and some other funders that came in to help us, and some of the other producers, our executive producers, Elise Katz and Sheila Laffey and Bill and Lori Benenson, have gotten involved to help us with different resources. So it's a unique kind of movie because it is about activists, but it's not exactly what people think. It's not your typical, it's not a cause. We're not asking you to go out and save the Redwoods right now. It's a story. Right. And it's a story that has a deep and profound meaning beyond that as well.
You know, and the irony, of course, is the term eco-terrorism has been being thrown around everywhere against, you know, nonviolent activists.
Yes.
And, you know, here's an act of terrorism that occurred against two activists, right?
What other act of terrorism, a bomb blowing up on U.S. soil, has not been investigated? I mean, really, it's pretty, when you think about that, that they have this bomb that they never even bothered to fingerprint or anything?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of...
How does that happen?
Well, to the cynical in the audience and, you know, people aware of the history, I'm sure it's, you know, we hear this often, right?
Yeah.
But, and again, one of the things that, you know, on that note, I would certainly be worried about the integrity of the evidence. And while today is a great victory in that the FBI has been ordered to hand it over, you know, part of me is like, well, you can't help but wonder that something's going to happen, right? Oh, oops. You know, that kind of thing. And perhaps the, you know, what this film can do is open, make sure that this conversation does not go, you know, away, that the light is, shine brightly on the issue.
That's exactly right. And I think that's what it's already doing. And I think that's part of why the judge, you know, might have made her ruling that way today, because the heat is on. We're getting a lot of press all over the place and on the radio and an LA Times article and the Huffington Post. And people in the Bay Area are, you know, very aware of this movie. And I'm sure that the judge was aware that a lot of people were going to be coming to the court if they were going to have a court date. And she didn't do that. She did the ruling ahead of a court date just on her own. But on top of it, there is the pressure to, hey, there's evidence here. And we still don't have, you have an unsolved attempted murder case, and you really can't mess with that. I mean, you just have to, you know, on a professional level, there's no way to know right now, but there will be when it's tested, if it's been tampered with. They'll be able to tell. They may have destroyed something. They may have destroyed evidence that would have shown, you know, actual fingerprints or DNA, but at least we will be able to know if it was tampered with. And if that doesn't lead to actual evidence that can, you know, find out who the real bomber is, then the whole push, I think, will keep going towards that. And if there's other evidence, there's other forms of evidence as well. And I think keeping the pressure on, a whistleblower, you know, just other avenues. But right now, there's a huge potential there. There's really could be a huge potential.
And, you know, it the other side, well, I shouldn't say the other side, but another element of how big this story really is you've got this Frank Doyle character on a national show that's for 8 years been doing, you know, on Mythbusters, right? It's a popular show. And he's coming on as a retired FBI bomb expert. Little does anybody know of, like, this history.
I know.
You know, and they should know it. In fact, the producers of that show need to be questioned, and pressure should be put on that show. Why do you know that this guy was found guilty in a court of law trying to lie about evidence in a terrorist bombing on U.S. soil? What, you know, that needs to be addressed.
It needs to be addressed. I think it'd be interesting if they would take up some of this case and do an investigation or look at Frank Doyle's signature of making bombs and see if they match anything on this case or things like that. We don't know who exactly is the person who did the bombing, and that's the most frustrating part of all this. There's a lot of evidence that leads different ways, but you need a law enforcement agent. You need people who are able to ask for depositions and do all the legal things that you can do. And Daryl and I with a movie can only go so far, and he can only go so far with his legal team. And then you have to get, you know, law enforcement to act.
Right. Well, I mean, that is the title of the movie is Who Bombed Judy Berry? And that's a question that's remaining out there. And, you know, we don't know. But at the same time, it's I think, our responsibility to put pressure where pressure needs to be put, you know, with anybody involved in that case.
That's so true. And the other thing about it is not only is we don't know who bombed her, we don't know enough about her. And she's an amazing female heroine of this country who should be, you know, up there in the lines of Martin Luther King and activists like that who really were able to drive a movement towards a mass movement of nonviolent civil disobedience and direct action. And that's, there's very few records like hers in the activism of our country and the history of people like that. And I think she's not well enough known, and she deserves to be.
Mary Liz Thompson is my guest, and she is the director, editor of a new film documentary called Who Bombed Judy Berry. The website is whobombedjudyberry.com. And I urge everybody to see this film. It's amazing, it's moving, and it's playing again.
On May 5th at the Landmark Region on Pico at the Awareness Festival at 7:30 Saturday night.
Great. And thank you so much for coming in and having this discussion. It's been a pleasure. Any last thoughts?
I really hope that the movie also continues to inspire people. We face a really difficult challenge still continue today with the way that we treat our environment, and just want to inspire people. You can all do something to save the earth.
All right, thanks. Thank you very much. I'm Chris Burnett. This is Indie Media On Air. Go to whobombedjudyberry.com. Thanks for listening.
Hola, ¿qué tal? I am Rubén Luengas, host of Contragolpe. Contragolpe airs every Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Tune in to hear a different perspective from the Spanish-speaking community. If you don't understand Spanish, don't worry, you can practice a little bit with me. I invite you to listen to my show, Contragolpe. Contragolpe.
Contragolpe. Credibility, facts, analysis, debate, and intense dialogue. Contragolpe, part of the new and exciting lineup, Wednesday nights.
Hi, my name is Carmela. I'm a student at Los Angeles City College. When I want to be informed about latest current affairs, music, health, and spirituality programming, I tune into KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and when online, on kpfk.org.
KPFK's webcast of the day for Mondays is Economic Update with Professor Richard Wolff. The ongoing economic crisis continues to be the dominant story of this decade, and no one breaks it down like Professor Wolff. To hear Economic Update with Richard Wolff, all you have to do is go to kpfk.org, and right there on the right side of the front page is a link to the webcast of the day. Click on it and enjoy Economic Update. And check out the webcast of the day 7 days a week on KPFK.